Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The government of Israel, already shaken by the surprise resignation of Foreign Minister Moshe Dayan, this morning suffered another and equally severe shock. Dan Raviv tells what happened.
In the most stunning blow an Israeli court has dealt to the government's plans to move Jews into the West Bank, the Supreme Court ordered the removal of the settlement of Elon Moreh. Earlier this year, the government had seized about 75 acres of private land near the Arab city of Nablus to make room for this settlement. The five-man court ruled in favor of the Palestinian landowners, who argued their land had been taken illegally. The court rejected the government's claim that Elon Moreh is needed for Israel's security. Foreign Minister Moshe Dayan had also disagreed with the cabinet decision and gave that as one reason for his resignation yesterday. The 15 Jewish families at Elon Moreh say they won't leave. They're calling on Prime Minister Begin's government to abandon the security argument and to state simply that Jews have a right to live anywhere in the West Bank. But the attorney general who lost this case says the settlers will have to leave. Dan Raviv for CBS News, Tel Aviv.
CBS News correspondent Bob Simon, noting that Dayan says he resigned because the Begin government rejected his policies, reports that a question being asked this morning is whether he also resigned because he felt the Israeli electorate would soon reject the Begin government. In the short term, says Simon, Dayan's departure will help the prime minister, enabling him to placate at least one of the warring factions of his coalition by offering the plum of Dayan's job. In the slightly longer term, though, Simon adds, it's difficult to see how Begin will compensate for the prestige his government has lost, both domestically and internationally, with the departure of Dayan. Senator Edward Kennedy is expected to announce this week the formation of a committee to explore his presidential campaign prospects, and that move will probably be followed soon afterward by a formal declaration of candidacy. Lee Thornton reports that President Carter, as he himself prepares to take that step, is commencing to speak of Kennedy as his open opponent.
President Carter is beginning to address Senator Edward Kennedy as a challenger, showing signs of abandoning his reluctance to talk about the coming contest. He is predicting victory over Kennedy in the primaries and leaning heavily on the outcome of the recent Florida caucuses as proof that he can do well in population centers. He says he would not yield to anyone in his ability to attract important constituencies such as Jews, labor, and blacks. Mr. Carter is going on the offensive, specifically attacking Kennedy's spending and defense postures.
Senator Kennedy is much more inclined toward the old philosophy of pouring out new programs and new money to meet a social need. He may be right. I disagree with him. I think in the matter of a commitment to our nation's defense strength, I would be in favor of much stronger defense commitments than his record shows.
President Carter says he hopes the ultimate outcome will depend not on personal popularity or charisma or speaking ability, but on his record. Lee Thornton, CBS News, The White House.
Mr. Carter made those remarks in an interview recorded Saturday in Boston and released last night. The interview also touched on another important matter reported by George Herman.
What looked at first glance like a sharp disagreement between President Carter on the one side and his chief economic advisor Charles Schulz and Federal Reserve Board Chairman Paul Volcker on the other side turns out to be not a disagreement at all. Volcker said last week, and Schulz, like other government economists, repeated yesterday, that Americans are going to have to accept a declining standard of living for a time. President Carter disagreed. But it turns out that the economists were talking about diminishing real income, shrinking buying power, and the president was talking about quality of life. He said lower thermostats and smaller cars and more carpooling will be accepted with resilience and strength and without lowering the quality of life. He was talking about morale, they were talking about money. He was talking of spiritual quality, they were talking about material possessions. Not a disagreement, just different subjects. George Herman, CBS News, Washington.
Auto workers employed by Ford Motor Company have now followed the lead of their colleagues at General Motors and by a 4-1 margin have approved a new 3-year contract. Results of the ratification vote were announced yesterday. But as we hear from Rob Marr at CBS radio affiliate WWJ in Detroit, the union is taking a different course in its approach to Chrysler.
The newly ratified auto workers union contracts at Ford and General Motors will not be followed at financially distressed Chrysler Corporation. Bargaining is currently underway at the number three automaker with a Thursday noon deadline. Chrysler is pressing hard for federal loan guarantees and needs union contract concessions to strengthen its case with the White House and Congress. The company wants a two-year freeze on union wages and benefits and has cut all salaried employees' wages between 2 and 10% for that same 2 years. Sources say the union has offered to defer for 6 months the industry package won at Ford and GM, but then wants the same pension benefit and wage increases as well as paid days off, plus a catch-up to the GM and Ford workers in the last year of the agreement. UAW President Douglas Frazier says it's the toughest set of negotiations this year. He has to forge a contract that will be okay by workers worried about their jobs and inflation, and at the same time help Chrysler survive. Rob Marr for CBS News, Detroit.
That Thursday noon deadline, by the way, does not carry with it the threat of a strike. The execution of Jesse Bishop took place on schedule early today at the Nevada State Prison. Harold Dow reports from Carson City.
Jesse Bishop was pronounced dead in the early morning hours. One of the 14 witnesses was a former prosecutor and longtime advocate of capital punishment, Mills Lane.
I saw it, and I don't feel any less about the death than I did before. I still believe in it, and I still believe it's necessary, and I still believe it's necessary in society. And I'll say one thing for Bishop. He had a lot of guts right down to the end. He didn't cry about it or raise any hell. He just sat there and took it.
In a field near the prison, several dozen death penalty protesters kept a candlelight vigil during the execution. A spokesman called it a sad, sad day, adding that future generations will find it hard to believe that we did something like this. Later this morning, Bishop's body will be removed to a local mortuary for cremation. The remains will then be taken to Southern California, where his family resides. Harold Dow, CBS News, Carson City, Nevada.
Bishop, who was 46 years old, spent more than 20 of those years in prison. He was executed for a murder committed in 1977. Early this morning, after the execution, State District Judge Paul Goldman, a member of the three-judge panel that sentenced Bishop to death for that crime, said he met with Bishop in August, and the judge says Bishop told him he'd been involved in 18 other murders in California and the Northeast, in addition to the one for which he was executed. Goldman said Bishop later gave a detective a list of names, dates, and places, but he himself, the judge said, does not know if Bishop's admission was true. On the surface, at least, the president of South Korea seems to have weathered the latest challenge to his rule. Peter Collins reports from Seoul.
A top political leader close to President Park Chung-hee says the Korean government will lift martial law in the southern cities of Busan and Masan in a couple of weeks. In an interview with CBS News, Park Chung-kyu, chairman of the ruling Democratic Republican Party, said some members of the government were eager to send the tanks and troops in the streets of the two cities back to their barracks even sooner because of the damage being done to South Korea's international image. Martial law was declared in Busan, South Korea's second largest city, last week after student-led rioters overturned cars and attacked police stations. There has been no trouble since last Thursday, although further violence is not ruled out. The students were protesting the expulsion from parliament earlier this month of the top opposition leader, Kim Jong-sam. Kim was expelled for telling the New York Times that the United States should intervene directly in South Korea's politics. In today's interview, Park Jong-kyu acknowledged that underlying resentment against President Park's regime had contributed to the rioting and said the government would review its policies. Peter Collins, CBS News, Seoul, Korea.
The communist government of Czechoslovakia this morning put six human rights agitators on trial in Prague. Among them is the playwright Václav Halev. All are accused of subversion. If convicted, they could get a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. Exxon Corporation this morning said it more than doubled its profits in the third quarter from the same period a year ago. Exxon is the nation's largest oil company. Gold went up about $4 an ounce in early trading today in Western Europe. It was fixed in London at $395.50 an ounce, slightly higher than that in Zurich. The dollar rose about a yen in Tokyo, and it's doing well in Western Europe.